our global economy is all interconnected and interdependent now. It's not like it used to be, you know, even, say, 25 years ago. If something happened in Greece 25 years ago, you know, over here we'd just kind of shrug our, or Italy, we'd just kind of shrug our shoulders about it. But now we're all so interconnected that it really does make a big difference. And I think from my standpoint, this is a, should be, and I hope it is, a wake-up call for the Congress. We need to get our act together here, and we need to really do everything we can to get the U.S. economy stable and growing again, because the world needs us to do that. You know, back in the old days, maybe Europe would come to the U.S. and say, hey, can you help us out here and provide a little stability? But we're really not in a position to do that right now, and that's another indicator that we need to get our act together in Washington.
Well, that's what I'm hearing more and more, is that as we look at this situation in Europe, some people are saying that we could be looking at our own future.
We could be, and certainly there's a lot of focus right now on the super committee in Washington to try to take care of our debt and deficit. I'll tell you this, and I think I've said this before to your listeners, is the good news about Washington is there is nothing wrong up here that we can't fix. We can fix all this stuff. It's just a matter of political will, and unfortunately we don't have enough of that right now to really get it done, but hopefully we'll look at what's going on in Europe and we'll say, hey guys, we need to take care of our business today. And we need to get the super committee needs to do the right thing. And I think they ought to go big. I think, you know, they have to do a minimum of $1.5 trillion. I would hope they'd go $4 trillion or $6 trillion. It's not going to be easy to do, but I think it would send a great signal to the world markets that the U.S. is going to take care of its business.
Yeah, this deadline is fast approaching for this Joint Select Committee on Deficit Reduction to come up with a proposal. If the committee can't reach an agreement, sequestration, a system of automatic budget cuts will be triggered. Some people are discussing the possibility of this happening.
It's very real. We put that in there because we wanted a severe penalty or a severe consequence if we didn't get our act together and pass something. Again, right now, the way it's set up, it's all in the hands of the super committee. They have to come back to us by November 23rd. You know, that's less than 2 weeks away now, so we literally are all just kind of anxiously awaiting to see what they come back with. But if they don't come back with something, then we have what they call sequestration, and what that means is there will be across-the-board cuts, and that includes military cuts. And these are going to be harsh and severe, and they're not going to be any fun to go through, so we're all hoping that the super committee will come back with something big.
That's one of the things that a lot of people have expressed concerns about are the cuts in defense. Are these a real problem?
Well, they are, and you know, we have obligations all over the world. We have men and women in uniform. They're serving in lots of different places right now, and yes, they are, and they're real. And, you know, you talk to Secretary Panetta, who's over at the Department of Defense now, and you talk to Bill Gates, Bob Gates, who left there not too long ago. Both of them will tell you that it is absolutely critical that we don't go through sequestration. The DOD understands they need reform, too. They need to cut their spending, and they know that. They get that, and they have lots of ways to do that. But the way they want to do it will not hurt our military readiness. The way sequestration will happen is it could very well hurt our military readiness. So it's just a painful thing that we have to go through right now. But, again, that gives, I hope that gives the super committee the incentive to come out with a good proposal.
Is the issue of taxes the main problem with the super committee's decision? Is that what they're wrangling over primarily?
Yes, that's been the real sticking point. You have a lot of Republicans who have said that they'll never support any tax increase, you know, basically under any circumstance. And, you know, some of that's just driven by the politics of Washington and national politics. But that's been the holdup, is the Republicans have been very, very reluctant and basically dug in and say, we're not going to budge on taxes. Well, the Democrats, let me back up. If you look at this, and there's been some analyses, and I'd encourage your listeners to go out online and look at why we have these big deficits today. There's lots of different factors, but most economists who look at it will say about 50% of the problem is due to the big tax cuts that we've done over the last several years. And some people call those the Bush tax cuts, but there are other tax cuts too. And so our tax policy is definitely contributing to the fact that we're going into deficit and more debt every year. So We need to put taxes on the table. The truth is what we need to do is we need to do what the Debt Commission said. We need to do tax reform. Our tax code is so complicated and so convoluted, it actually hurts the U.S. economy. We need to make it simpler and fairer and more transparent and, make it, just make it a system that actually works and actually, it raises taxes but also does it in a fair way. And that's we just don't have that tax code right now.
Of course, primarily Republicans say that we can largely get where we need to be just by cutting spending and reforming the tax code. Is that going to be enough?
Well, you have to put both. We have to put all three on the table. You have to put your discretionary spending and your entitlement spending, which means things like the sacred cows of things like Social Security and Medicare, and there are lots of other entitlements too. But you have to put all that on the table, as well as the tax code. And where the Republicans have sort of been playing some games up here, honestly, is they say, yeah, we'll put the tax code on the table, but you can't raise any taxes. Well, guys, we have to. I mean, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but if you look at the effective tax rate of, like, you look at a corporation, I mean, everybody talks about GE, but you look at GE, they pay zero in federal income tax last year. Walmart paid 30%. I mean, it makes no sense. And so, yes. Taxes need to go up on GE. I'm here to say that. Yes, 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 we need to raise taxes on GE. But that's what I'm saying. We need to make it fairer. There are lots of people, lots of companies out there that are not paying their fair share right now. Now, let me say this. I think the Democrats are wrong in one area on taxes. I think what sometimes you hear Democrats say is if we just raise taxes on millionaires enough, then that'll fix it. That didn't fix it either. If you look at the numbers, you don't get close to fixing it that way. We need broad and comprehensive tax reform.
The argument seems to go back and forth between there's those who say it's not fair to place more of a tax burden on those who have been successful in obtaining wealth and who have the potential to create jobs. But then, is it fair to require more from those huge segments of the population who are already struggling?
That's right. And you have to look at all that, and you have to balance all that, and that's one of the things senators have to do is we have to kind of weigh all these considerations. But I will say this, that, when President Bush promised these lower taxes, and he did it. He did what he said he was going to do. He lowered people's taxes, and he really took the tax burden off the wealthier segment of our population and also off a lot of corporations, and that's what you get sometimes. But you have to ask yourself, after 8 years of that kind of policy, where were we? Well, we're almost basically bankrupt, and also our economy was in a terrible, terrible recession at the end of the Bush years. It's not all President Bush's fault. I'm not saying that. But some of these promises you get on taxes really don't pan out when you really look at history. So my view is we need to make the tax code much fairer, much simpler. We do need to raise some revenue, but I think we can do it in a very measured and just and humane way that actually helps the economy. In fact, I'll say this, the very conservative foundation up here called the Heritage Foundation that does all these studies on this stuff, mm-hmm. They said if you would follow along basically with the recommendations of the Simpson-Bowles Debt Commission, that you'd create 2 million new jobs in this country. 2 million new jobs. I don't know if that's accurate, but let's say if it's half right, you're creating 1 million new jobs by doing tax reform. So this deserves very serious consideration. I think it'll help our economy, and I also think it'll make people feel better because they'll feel like our tax system is fairer.
Well, there's lots of talk about highways now. Arkansas just approved a method funding highway improvements in an election this week, and there's work going on in the Senate on the highway reauthorization bill.
Yes, there is, and I voted for that. It sounds like with, 60% or 70% of the Arkansans that voted in that, mm-hmm. And I was glad we did that. And basically what the state wants to do is they want to take what would be a 15- to 20-year dribbling out of federal highway money to the state. They want to front-load that, do bonds, and do all that work in about 3 years and then pay the bonds out over time. That's worked well, and that'll help a lot with keeping up our infrastructure in the state. But we also have in Washington a federal highway bill that we're trying to do, which I'm supportive of. In fact, some of the criticism of it is that it doesn't go long enough into the future. I would like to see a 5-year highway bill. I think this one's only for a year or two. But they're working that, and they're doing the best they can in the Senate to try to get that passed. And we just need to continue to invest in our infrastructure. You look at the Jonesboro area, for example. A lot of your listeners live in or right around Jonesboro. There's some real highway needs here. You guys want and should have a four-lane connector, mm-hmm. interstate quality to connect into the rest of Arkansas, and you don't right now. And you need that, and that'll just do nothing except help Jonesboro grow and help people get in and out of Jonesboro, which would be very, very good for everyone.
Well, one topic that is concerning a lot of people in our region of the country, the plans to close many rural post offices. You know, of course, we're all aware that the demand for postal service has diminished in this electronic age, and there's competition now, but a lot of rural communities, post offices are the only game in town.
No, it is, and it's a real problem. And I spent basically all day yesterday, I think it was 4 or 5 hours worth of committee time yesterday in the Homeland Security Committee, which I'm on, and we had the postal reform bill in the committee, and we passed it out of the committee with lots of amendments, and I had some amendments on it. But basically, we are trying to save the post office and trying to prevent the closing of lots of rural post offices and rural and facilities around the country. But I'm going to tell you, the numbers are hard. What we did yesterday is we did lots of things I think people in Arkansas will like. You know, there's been this problem with the Postal Service having to overpay into their retirement and into their health care. We addressed that yesterday. We made a pathway for them to thin out their workforce by doing some early retirements. We've seen that be very successful with the military and be very successful in the private sector in years past. We are changing their workers' compensation system to try to get it in line more with a lot of other federal employees. We are preserving Saturday delivery at least for 2 years, but we are going to give them some flexibility down the road if they meet certain criteria to look at Saturday delivery. So also doing some things to streamline and make them more efficient. So there's a lot in this legislation, and I'm hoping at the end of the day what it does is it keeps a really high quality of service, but also will keep a lot of those rural post offices open.
Well, before we run out of time, of course, we don't want to neglect at all to mention that, of course, tomorrow is Veterans Day. What do you have any particular plans for Veterans Day?
Well, I'm going to go to the state capitol. Every year they have a big Veterans Day memorial there where we honor our veterans and just take a few moments to say thank you. It's always at 11 o'clock on 11-11 in the state mm-hmm. capitol. So we're doing that, and, you know, there's just so many very patriotic Arkansans who've served this country. And I'll tell you, one company that gets a lot of credit is Tyson Foods. Yesterday was at the White House being honored for their commitment to hire veterans. They have a program where they hire a bunch of veterans there, and Tyson loves it because veterans mm-hmm. are great workers, and the White House and the Pentagon and VA love it as well because we have an unemployment problem with veterans, so we're trying to address that.
And, of course, Arkansas State's been kind of recognized recently for its veteran-friendly campuses.
Yeah, they do, and I think that's great. ASU has done a great job of encouraging veterans to come to school, either come back to school or come to school and finish up there, and they've been doing great things there, and they have that veteran center there. So really good things happening on campus at ASU.
Of course, we want to take time to honor our veterans tomorrow, and always, but tomorrow in particular. Some interesting election results around the nation this week. Mississippi surprised a lot of people by turning down a very controversial abortion referendum, and Ohio voters turned down a law curbing collective bargaining rights. Do some of these results give us any tea leaves to read going into next year's election?
Well, all the prognosticators and talking heads love to read the tea leaves and try to guess where the general public is. Truth is, it's probably a mixed bag, and there were some surprises. You know, quite honestly, I thought that the Mississippi voters might enact that proposal. They were trying to set up a big challenge to Roe versus Wade, but they decided not to. You know, Ohio, I think, in the end, wasn't a big surprise. I think the governor there basically has admitted that he overreached, and, you know, that's an example where they kind of got in a mode there in Ohio, the governor's office did, where they were just blaming the unions for everything. And it's like in Wisconsin, I think the unions had given some, and anyway, you can't blame all the problems on one group or one person, and I think the voters kind of saw through that over time.
All right. Well, Senator Mark Pryor, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Senator Mark Pryor joins us from his office in Washington. You're listening to Morning Edition.